Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hi, I'm Alicia Davis from Brooklyn, New York, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, thank you very much, Alicia, from Brooklyn. I've never been to Brooklyn. I really want to go now. Because we've got a listener there, and she's been backing us here on the Tennis Podcast. Catherine, have you been to Brooklyn?
It's bad timing, David, because you literally can't go anywhere at the moment. Yes, I have been to Brooklyn.
Is it nice?
Yes. Didn't I tell the story once of sort of almost getting decapitated on the Brooklyn Bridge? So
no.
The route there was a bit treacherous, but once there, had a lovely time.
Oh, good. Oh.
There are a lot of people with selfie sticks on the Brooklyn Bridge, and the selfie sticks often jutted out across the cycle lane. And it was a quite high velocity cycle lane, and I had to dodge out of the way of some selfie sticks a few times.
Well done for dodging them. Matt, have you ever been to Brooklyn?
I have, yes. When I went to the US Open in 2017 with a couple of my university friends, they're big fans of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And we went over to Brooklyn to stand outside one of the buildings in that program. It was a nerdy trip.
Right. So I'm the only one, I'm the odd one out then.
How many times have you been to New York without going to Brooklyn, David?
About 18. Moving on. Anyway, Alicia, thank you so much for your support of the Tennis Podcast. Given that you have supported it, I think we better talk about tennis. We're going to be talking about other things as well, because Catherine Whittaker's had quite a day, let me tell you. And we'll be getting onto that. But first, let's talk about four players who have been lighting it up today. And Dominic Thiem and Novak Djokovic, first of all. Battled it out, and then Daniil Medvedev and Rafael Nadal did the same. We've ended up with a Thiem Medvedev final, but I think probably during those matches I would have expected the way they were going both of the opposite results to have happened, quite honestly. What did you think of Thiem Djokovic? Let's just look at what happened in that match, because I wasn't watching it that closely because I was cooking and I was trying to sort out arguments between my kids, but I'd got it on. And I said about 10 games in, Djokovic looks like he's playing really well, and you weren't as sure about my assertion, Matt.
No. I thought throughout the match it was a good level but not a brilliant level. If we're comparing it to previous Thiem Djokovic matches, it put me more in mind of the Australian Open final they had this year rather than the round-robin match they played at the ATP finals last year, which Djokovic described that one as out of the ordinary because Thiem just played out of his mind for the whole match and Djokovic stayed with him for the whole match. But it felt like they both had a full tank of weapons, energy, ability for the whole match, and it was just a force of a tennis match. Whereas at the Australian Open, they were kind of having to navigate various issues they were dealing with. Djokovic was dealing with energy problems, and Thiem was dealing with kind of the nerves of a Grand Slam final. And here, it felt like they were both dealing with not quite having their best tennis. But I think that feeds into what you said at the start, David, about during the match thinking Djokovic might be the one to win it. And I had the same thought because Djokovic is an expert at winning when he doesn't quite play his best, or an expert at doing just enough to win. And I thought he was probably going to end up doing that yet again. So that was kind of where I stood from a level point of view of that match. But then, as I expected, I suppose, it came down to a couple of tie breaks. You know, we've talked a lot about both of their tie break records this year. And after the first tie break they played, I was ready to take away everything I've ever said about how good they are in tie breaks, because it was one of the worst tie breaks I've ever seen in terms of quality. You know, neither of them could hold serve in it. It was extraordinary.
It's like they cancelled one another out with their tie break brilliance.
Yes, exactly. And neither of them could perform.
Goalless draw.
Yeah. But from that point of view, it did strike me as a match which really was one of those ones where I missed the crowd, because the quality itself wasn't enough to sustain the match. The most interesting aspect of it, I thought, was the intrigue and the drama. And I just kept having that thought, oh, imagine 17,000 people kind of losing their minds over this match, swaying this way and that. So, I really did feel the lack of crowd, because I think they can elevate drama and they can elevate chaos, which is what was happening in that match. But having said that, it did live up to its billing in terms of them being very closely matched, and as a kind of spectacle of tennis, it was very, very exciting.
When it got into that third set tiebreak, Catherine, I mean, Djokovic went 4-love up, and he was flying. You know, he was ready to take the title, and also team was missing and just looked as though it was just a step too far. What happened? Because, I mean, what he did after that was a reminder of probably what, I don't know, what only he can do in the game right now in terms of an injection.
Yeah, well, I think he went into his shell, Djokovic, and I realise there's a fine, very fine line, possibly even only one of perception, between going into your shell and going into lockdown, which is what we've lauded Novak Djokovic for doing in tiebreaks over the course of the last 2 years, and what's been responsible for for his brilliant record in tiebreaks. No, I'm now using COVID terminology to describe tennis. What a sorry state of affairs.
The thing is, it used to have a meaning that we're all comfortable with, and now it's got this ulterior meaning.
It's ruined everything. But I think going into lockdown in a situation as tense and error-inducing as tiebreaks against most players is enough. But Dominic Thiem has this ability to be so brave, so courageous in those moments. And he's good enough that it seems to... Today, you know, it's the old adage of fortune favouring the brave. It really, really did tonight. And that's certainly what Djokovic said after the match. He praised how courageous Dominic Thiem was from 4-love down. And he did make Djokovic look passive and, dare I say, almost a little flat. I know there were outbursts from Djokovic, and this is a sort of constant source of debate in our Prime studio between Daniela Hantikova and Greg Rozetsky about what is the best Djokovic state of mind, what is the most conducive Djokovic state of mind to his best tennis. Greg wants to see him angry and frustrated and defiant, and Daniela wants to see a sort of slightly more meditative, zen-like Djokovic. I think the answer is probably somewhere in the middle, but I do tend to lean a bit more towards Greg, really, and I do just wonder if he is, what happened in New York is forcing him or making him feel like he does need to restrain himself, even if it's just subconsciously, and whether that's a bit of a a drain on his abilities. Look, he was really, really good today. We're talking extremely fine margins, but the others are getting better. So those fine margins will become increasingly important, I think.
I think it's a very legitimate question to ask. You know, was he flat today? And is that as a consequence of what happened to him at the US Open? And I think not even just today. If you look at probably the three standout matches since that US Open incident were the French Open final, where I thought he was flat against Nadal.
Mm-hmm.
That strange defeat he took to Sonego, where he was flat and there was no kind of sense that he was really going to be defiant and resilient in it. And then it was this match today where there was kind of one primal scream, wasn't there, where he missed a forehand return, but it never turned into the fire and the resilience we have seen from him before. And what I thought was interesting is that it was clearly there, because he flew into his press conference and was pent up and pretty frustrated. I mean, naturally, he's lost a very close match, but you know, we sometimes talk about Djokovic giving really long answers in his press conference. This was the complete opposite. He was fulsome in his praise of team and very gracious and acknowledged how well team played. But he was also clearly annoyed and frustrated. And dare I say, he displayed more visible kind of fire in that 5-minute press conference than I felt he did in the match. So I am wondering whether he's trying to keep something in, and I definitely lean on the side of Djokovic is at his best when he's emotional. It's cost him in the past. We've seen that, but it's also helped him.
This is the second year in a row that he has said about Dominic Thiem, I played well and I couldn't believe what he was. They were all going in. Last year, I remember him saying specifically, almost a little bit, I don't want to say sneery, but almost as if to say, well, he ain't going to be able to do that again. That's not going to keep happening. Because, I mean, that was the big thing. He kept on landing those ground strokes on the baseline, but it's just that Thiem is so violent with his ground strokes when he's in that frame of mind that he's still hitting winners. And then today, from four love up, he said again, I didn't think I did that much wrong. He was just incredible, what he was doing, the way he can flatten out these balls and just smash them at you as though he's not even considering whether they might go out or not. You know, if they go out, fine. I'm just going to belt the living daylights out of the ball as hard as I can. But they're going in. And I think that it comes back to Djokovic against those type of players. He will give you his 9 out of 10. He'll give you that base level and see if you can get above it enough. Because he doesn't have a Wawrinka and a team explosion of power. He just doesn't have that. But he has something else. He has the movement and he has the explosive stretches out wide that keep the ball deep and make you miss as well. Over 5 sets, that's the other thing. I know Thiem has beaten him at the French, but it'll be very interesting to see whether he can get him over 5 on a hard court. Very interested to see them play again, probably somewhere like the Australian Open. But it's interesting. I wonder whether it will end up affecting Djokovic, you know, these kind of defeats.
Don't dangle the carrot of an Australian Open in front of us, no. David.
We'll come on to that in a minute.
It's a mere hallucination.
Yeah, that seems to change every day at the moment, the potential and the prospects of an Australian Open. So we'll get on to that in a minute. Let's just deal with the matches here first. So Thiem is into the final. He now faces Medvedev. But, I mean, just as Djokovic was 4-love up in that tiebreak, Nadal was serving for the match against Daniil Medvedev, which surprised me a bit in as much as Nadal had his way more than I expected in this match. I thought it might be the other way around, that Medvedev might race into the lead and Nadal peg him back. So what actually happened, Matt, today?
Well, it was clear from the start, I thought, that it was a matchup which Medvedev quite likes. you know, Nadal's topspin forehand going into his backhand, and he can flatten it out and hit those penetrating ground strokes and push Nadal around a bit. And Medvedev certainly started the better player. He made his first 16 first serves, and his service games were taking 90 seconds, and Nadal's service games were taking about 7 minutes. Nadal was the one hanging on at the start, but I think I put on our Twitter account that it was a meeting of tennis minds tonight. And I think because the US Open final was so long and grueling, and we saw how much it took out of Nadal, I've thought of this match in physical terms. I've thought of it as a big battle, you know, between two, you know, just sort of prime athletes. But actually it was kind of a bit of a chess match out there, and it was a really interesting tactical match. And Nadal figured it out and managed to neutralize those strengths of Medvedev. He hit so many slice backhands, and, you know, to stop Medvedev being able to hit it up high and take it early. And he hit his forehand down the line fantastically, and he came into the net very astutely, sometimes serve and volleying. And I thought it was just a brilliant tactical performance from Nadal. But then it seemed like once Medvedev broke back when Nadal was serving for the match, and Nadal didn't play a great game, but Medvedev played a brilliant game. He made all his returns and deep and really went out and won that game. Then it kind of felt like it switched again, and Medvedev made the changes and then was the one in control throughout that third set. And yeah, I just really admired the way they both thought out there and thought their way through the problems, and you could see them changing their games during the match. It was a fascinating watch from a tactical point of view, I thought.
Hmm. Do you feel therefore Medvedev took that break of serve back when Nadal's serving for the match, or did Nadal blow it a bit? Did he choke at all?
No, I don't think it was a choke.
No.
I don't think it was a choke.
I think he got four or five first serves in that game. You know, no double faults. Medvedev's returned brilliantly. I don't think there were any return winners, but, you know, right at Nadal's feet throughout that game. So might not have been Nadal's best game, but it definitely wasn't a choke.
And there was a point in the tiebreak, I think it was 4-3 in the tiebreak, Nadal had a forehand that he probably should have put away, but he just went one direction and Medvedev guessed the right direction and frankly got lucky. He framed a shot which went over Nadal's head, lobbed him, and it went in. And that seemed to change the tiebreak. It was just a very small moment like that. And you could say Nadal at his best wouldn't have hit it that way. He would have hit it into the open space. But it was a little bit lucky, that moment for Medvedev. I mean, the third set certainly wasn't.
And he then performed the apology fist bump transition move.
Yes, marvellous.
Which is just the best.
That's a
In
a
one
cool
fluid
move.
Motion, an apology can become a celebratory fist bump.
Yeah, I think I might have to play that back. In fact, we need to get a gif of that. Mm. That could come in handy. A couple of points I just wanted to make. When you were talking about the sliced backhand, there was one rally where I think Nadal drifted about eight successive backhand slices over the net and just kept on doing it, and Medvedev kept on pinpointing the backhand and kept rolling his cross-court forehand to it or an inside-out backhand to it, and Nadal's slicing and floating and drifting and floating and floating and floating, and then boom, down the line goes the backhand for a clean winner. And I just love that moment of decision of, right, trigger is being pulled now. And it's such a clever rally. I mean, look, he didn't win the match, but I agree with you. I really enjoyed watching the tactical battle between the two in that regard. I've got a little image that I want to give you for Medvedev that I've just come up with. To me, Medvedev reminds me of a velociraptor from the Jurassic Park movies. The way the moment
the little
he's
tiny
got,
hands.
No, they're absolutely.
And it's the T-Rexes that have the little tiny hands.
You know, they're the vicious little dinosaurs that just are incredibly quick and so awful in the way they come at you. When they've got a chance, when they've got an opening, they are vicious and they will not let it go. And they will stop at nothing.
Aren't they quite sort of compact, though?
I don't know. They're quite wiry.
Sort of more Diplodocus-y.
No. I like this, what I like about Medvedev, the reason I come up with this, is because the moment he gets a sniff of blood on the court, he's on you. He goes for you.
They're very clever, the Velociraptor. Oh, no, is it the T-Rexes that are... One of them's very clever. All of this knowledge is from Jurassic Park, obviously.
The Velociraptor is the clever one.
The Velociraptor is the one that's defeated via the reflection in the oven.
Yes, correct.
Yes, that's how they escape from the Velociraptor. Right. Well, that's what Dominic Thiem's got to do tomorrow, then.
Bring his oven out.
We're following through this ropey analogy, which we seem to be.
I started it, so there we are. Matt, have you seen the Jurassic Park films at all?
I have, yes.
Okay. Anything
no one hasn't seen Jurassic Park. And also, David, no one says the Jurassic Park films. That's not a thing.
Why not?
It's Jurassic Park and then some subsequent movies they made to, which, you know, if you enjoy them, fine. But no, that's like saying,
Jurassic
have you seen
Park
the,
when it came
that's
out.
Like saying, have you seen the Grease movies?
I went to
no
the cinema and saw
No one is putting Grease 2 in with Grease. It's
I quite liked
absolutely
Grease 2.
Absolutely not a thing. Okay,
Maxwell Caulfield and Michelle Pfeiffer, as I recall.
I feel like I should do you a favour and wrap this portion of the podcast up.
Brutal. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there you go, Patrick Mouratoglou. Free nickname for Daniil Medvedev, the Velociraptor. Right. Matt.
What I do like about Medvedev is I didn't used to understand him at all. I didn't understand how he was good.
I don't think you're alone there, Matt. I mean, Tim Henman still seems to be a bit confused.
I mean, he is unorthodox and he is deceptive. I still think he is. But I think we're learning about what makes him good and how he wins these matches. And I've really enjoyed seeing that development over the last year. And I would actually say a similar thing about Thiem. Thiem is satisfying as someone who watches tennis all the year round because we've literally witnessed him get better on hard courts before our eyes. And it's been incremental, but it's been solid and sustained. And that's quite fulfilling and satisfying, I think, when you're watching. You're very aware that it isn't just a flash in the pan. It's development and progress. And that's kind of what you want to see, I think. So I think they're both similar in that respect. In fact, in terms of our understanding of them has developed quite a lot.
Yeah, we've been on a journey with them both, haven't we? It's like, you know, no one ever wins strictly if they're brilliant in week one.
Do they not?
No.
No, you've got to go on a
Why
journey.
Not?
See Danny Mac. I'm still upset about that.
No one remembers Danny Mac.
He was amazing.
Yeah, he had professional dance training, Matt. I should think so too.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. He was so good in week one.
Yeah.
I'll have to check with my kids to find out what you're talking about because they watched that. Right. So we've got Thiem against Medvedev in the final. Nadal, I saw his press comments afterwards and, you know, he gave some very interesting answers, particularly about, we'll come on to talk about Australia, but I mean, he's, again, very philosophical about the seriousness of the situation and how he doesn't want sport to be a big deal, really.
I found his walk off court very sad tonight.
Yeah.
He's
never going to win the O2, is he?
He looked sad. You know, obviously he'd just lost a really tight match and been knocked out of a tournament that he desperately wants to win, and maybe I'm imposing my own feelings on him. I'm projecting, but I don't know. He looked sad about the situation. He looked sad about having no crowd to wave to on his way out of the O2 for the very last time. He looked like he was just drinking in all the sadness.
I mean, you had a few moments of showing last year's final on Prime Video today between Tsitsipas and Team. And I mean, that it felt like the crowd were almost on the court. They were so desperate to be involved. Mm.
Yeah, I kept looking up and seeing that, and my instinctive reaction was, oh my God, why aren't you social distancing? And then I just sort of cried a bit inside. Anyway, keep it light, David. Move on.
It's all right. The jolly stuff's to, well, kind of, to come.
Don't you think, though, that as sad as that image was, and maybe this is just me being cruel, but there is something so tantalizing about these greats at the moment, all still having things to chase and just not quite being able to get there, perhaps. You know, we've got it with Serena, we've got it with Federer Federer is an interesting case because he's trying to hold people off as well, but he's also got that Olympic gold just sort of dangling there. Same with Djokovic and the Grand Slam record. And this is it for Nadal, isn't it? The ATP Finals. And I don't know, there's something quite special about people having achieved so much, but just wanting more. And that was kind of what was going through my mind when I saw Nadal leave that court like that. It was kind of summed it all up, I thought.
Mm, that was Tsitsipas-esque in its profoundness, Matt.
Indeed.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Talking about heartbreak, Joe Salisbury.
Oh.
What happened to him today? Because when I was watching, he and Rajiv Ram were set up, and then things started to go against them. And then they seemed to have a pretty decent lead in the tie break, and then I think I had to cook the kids' dinner, and then the next thing I knew, he hadn't won. So tell me what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely call a 7-1 lead in a tie break pretty decent. They also had match point in that tie break. Yeah, I mean, he and Rajiv Ram are presumably in my midst somewhere in this hotel. And I can almost imagine the despair radiating off them. I hope their minibar was stocked in a way that mine wasn't. Utter despair, just really, really bleak for them. They had the prize of, yes, reaching the final here, and that's a massive prize in terms of prestige and finances and pride. But for me, I think an even bigger carrot was reaching world number one, which they would have done with a win tonight. They didn't need to win the final tomorrow.
Oh, my word. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And this is not a very technical analysis, but that was it. It was too much. It was too big a carrot.
Is that how it felt?
They stumbled over the carrot, if you will.
Watching the points at 7-1, did it feel... I mean, they were up against...
Meltzer and Roger Vasselin, yeah.
So Meltzer, 39 years of age, playing in his final... event, I think, and Edouard Roger Vasselin, 7-1. You know, you never get necessarily get 100% choke and 100% inspired performance, do you? But where do you put the percentages? Is that too mean?
I want to be kind, but very much on the side of choke. I mean, Roger Vasselin, Meltzer, particularly Meltzer, and like he's a player that almost wasn't far off qualifying for this tournament in singles once upon a time. They knew how tight Ram and Salisbury were going to be, and they played to that, and they played very smartly to that. Meltzer made absolutely sure of his returns when it mattered. You know, I was watching up in the studio with Tim Hemman and Greg Rozetsky, and Hemman just said, absolutely no way Meltzer's missing these returns, and he didn't. You know, it was... Yeah, they squandered a huge, huge opportunity tonight, and it is very possible that they won't get the chance again to reach number one in the world. I mean, the doubles is so unpredictable and open. Who on earth knows?
Especially with all these changes of the partnerships and who's going to come out.
Yeah, I mean,
both
that might help them. Doubles.
Yeah, could do.
Absolutely. Both doubles finals teams tomorrow, it will be their last match as a pairing.
Mm.
Right.
Confirmed.
Oh, okay. Of course, because Mektić is going to join up with Pavic, who has just become world number one with... Well, he's become world number one.
They've maintained their world number one status.
Right.
Okay. Pavic and Suarez. But
and now they're splitting up.
And yeah, they're going to throw that in the bin. And disappear off with other partners. And Roger Vasselin is going to play with Henry Kontinen. And Wesley Kuhlhoff is going to play with Lucas Kubot.
Oh. Yes.
And Jürgen Meltzer is going to sail off into the retirement sunset.
And there's something about Meltzer and Roger Vasselin this week. This was not their greatest escape of the week. I mean... They saved five match points, didn't they, against Piers and Venus, and they qualified courtesy of the retirement of Granollers and Zaballos. So quite
and
how they're in the final,
match.
Yes.
When I see them in those matching outfits, I get a little jolt of Herbert Mahou, and then I see their faces, and it's all wrong.
It's not working,
but
no.
No. Catherine's face just lights up talking about Mo and Herbert. So yeah, we've got tomorrow the doubles final, Meltzer and Roger Vasselin against Kuhlhoff and Mektić. And actually that was the first one-sided doubles match of the week, wasn't it? And they were up against Granollers and Zaballos. Granollers, we knew, had that shoulder problem, 6-3, 6-4. So very straightforward. Now, the Australian Open is... a subject we've talked about quite a lot. We told you how players weren't now going to be allowed in December because of the Australian government cracking down on people coming into the country and not wanting loads of tennis players in December. I think particularly when their own national citizens are stranded overseas, perhaps, and they're just opening up and want to get them in first. The word we had was that they weren't going to let anybody in until January the 1st. Which creates that issue of how do you quarantine them for 2 weeks, have a build-up series of tournaments, maybe including the ATP Cup, and then have an Australian Open 2.5 weeks later, and potentially only have 3 or 4 days after quarantine, if they're not allowed to compete during the quarantine period, in order to be prepared. Well, it seems to have taken a real stride on this story over the last 24 to 48 hours. And it, the word we had overnight last night was that there was a real chance that the entire Australian summer of tournaments might be delayed and postponed, and that the Australian Open might not even take place until April, were some of the reports coming out of Channel 9 I read this morning, and The Age and one or two others. I've heard March as well, mooted as a potential. None of this is official. I don't believe that Tennis Australia have commented officially on it, but it's clear that some of this has been floated in some quarters and some conversations, because this information is out there. I've heard Todd Woodbridge talk on Channel 9 about it, and he has a foot in the camp of Tennis Australia as well. So this is obviously on the agenda, and from what I read, over the next 48 to 72 hours, they expect to have some news. It's pretty jarring, isn't it, to think that they're in quite such a situation, and we don't really know whether there's going to be an Australian Open in January, Catherine. I mean, you know, you've, and there's obviously potential knock-on effects for the whole calendar as well.
Well, exactly. Kind of what I'm eager to know is whether we're in a kind of French Open situation of we're going to make our own decision and do what suits us and hope that everyone else falls in line and it works out, or whether this is something that is being discussed in coordination. I mean, it has to be in coordination with the tour, surely, but with all the other events that are implicated in these sorts of decisions. I don't know if there is a set protocol for these sorts of decisions. I mean, the way the French Open behaved with regards to their rescheduling this year, it seemed not. It's like, I know uncertainty is now the only certainty, but this feels very late in the day for this uncertainty to be happening. I get it completely. I'm not criticizing the Australian government's stance on this at all. I respect it, but goodness me, these are things are happening quickly, aren't they? And you know, they need to, I suppose, because players would have been flying out in a couple of weeks. I mean, it's just all, can't quite bend my head around it.
Yeah. So we'll wait and see.
Weren't Tennis Australia on that joint press release criticising the French Tennis Federation for the move they made at the time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They were.
That one might get reminded to them.
I mean, I
if
do.
If they're not careful. Well,
I know that the ATP depend quite heavily on revenue from the ATP Cup. And I suspect that is even more so the case at the moment, when revenues are significantly diminished. You know, this tournament, the ATP Finals and the ATP Cup, are their big earners. And it sounds like, you know, if the Australian Open were to go ahead in the sort of circumstances that we were discussing a couple of days ago before more recent developments, it sounds like the ATP Cup might have been something that would fall by the wayside. So I, on the basis of that, and that's purely speculation, I would possibly guess that they would have the ATP support for a move. But I absolutely don't know that for sure. And I've no idea where the WTA would stand on it. And I'd certainly be very interested to know where other events on the calendar stand on it. You know, the Australian Open and the Australian tournaments are in the privileged position that they were able to happen this year. You know, you look at other events in the calendar that would potentially be displaced or impacted by an Australian Open move. They've all missed a year. From Indian Wells onwards, you're looking at tournaments that have already had maximum maximum disruption and probably can't afford to have another year of that. So, more uncertainty.
Messy, indeed. Anyway, we'll bring you the latest that we have on it as soon as we get any more information coming out on it. Now, you may remember a few days ago, before this tournament started, we had our preview show and we told the story of how Catherine had to have a last-minute trip to the dentist. And we managed to get that all sorted out, and Catherine made her way to the O2 Arena, and she has been presenting live television all week, and she has been absolutely fantastic. But other things have happened today, and it made me think back to this moment on that previous show when we've been talking about this trip to the dentist. Listen to this.
I'm slightly worried about the next part of your face, which is going to come under fire in 2020. We've had eyes, we've had mouth.
I broke my nose when I was seven as well. Gym class at school, PE
class. Is it
class.
The same girl or...?
No, I did that to myself. I just hit it on a bench. An accident-prone child and adult.
Yep. Accident-prone child, Catherine Whittaker. And today, she was going in early to do some rehearsals. And this happened.
Hello and welcome to London's O2 Arena, where over the last 12 years we've witnessed some truly memorable tennis moments. Well, today we'll see the world's best, the top... Yeah.
Overbalanced.
Yeah, I'm fine. I've tried to walk in heels, Kate, is what I've done.
Now, first of all, Catherine, I mean, I am laughing, but I was concerned for your welfare.
Briefly,
are you
okay? Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine.
Okay. Yeah. So, can you first of all just tell us what happened?
I fell over, David, very clearly. I fell over.
Right. Okay. Now, you've all heard that. What you may not have done is seen the video, which exists. And this is because Catherine managed to get footage of this moment.
I was presented with footage almost immediately on multiple screens.
Yeah. And this was nothing to do with me, dear listener. This did not go on the Tennis Podcast channel. In fact, I was very hesitant. Mm. I wasn't sure that this should go out.
One of my favourite things is how quickly David goes from very, very genuine concern to amazing content opportunity. Clipping up bits for the podcast. It's wonderful.
But Catherine was quicker than me this time, and Catherine put this video on her personal Twitter account with the caption. What was your caption?
Oh, I don't know. Don't make me quote myself, David.
It was, this is my big chance to become a meme.
Right. First of all, what's a meme?
it's not really something you explain.
No, exactly.
Okay, all right, Mum, I'll figure it out and I'll tell you later what it is. But anyway, Catherine put this video on and it took off. Because so far, as we come to you on the night of this accident that Catherine had, more than 140,000 people have seen it. More than 3,000 people have liked it. A news agency in Australia...
That's not a great ratio, is it?
What?
Of views to likes.
No, that's actually really good.
Is it? Oh,
that's,
I don't know.
That's quite good.
Yeah. This has never happened before.
I should say that the absolute vast majority of people who replied expressed genuine concern, a bit like me, and then also said, but I also watched it 9 times because it was so funny. We did see quite a lot of that. And then an Australian news agency wrote a piece which was headlined, Tennis Presenter's Epic Fall Goes Viral. And this was by Jay Bedroyal from the Australian News Agency.
Yeah, but they got my name wrong.
And he intros it, kudos to Caroline Whittaker for sharing a moment that wasn't broadcast live because her tumble at the ATP finals needed to be seen by the world. The sports
needed to be.
Well, you made sure it did. The sports presenter was doing a trial run of her introduction of a blockbuster slate of semi-final matches on Sunday morning featuring the top four ranked men's players in the world. The clip Whittaker shared showed her talking about some of the memorable last four matches that have been witnessed at the season-ending tournament, which is being held in London for the 12th and final time. Today, we'll see the world's best, the top four, she said, before rolling an ankle and crashing to the ground. Yes, I'm okay, by the way, she tweeted after posting the vision. And no, we weren't live. Tennis fans were treated again once the action began on court as Dominic Thiem recovered from squandering four match points.
Yes, so you Australian lead. News
Dominic
Agency.
Thiem followed
they
you.
Were equivalent achievements. Thank you very much. Yes.
Oh, Just epic.
Turns
tennis
out the body
fall.
Part that Matt should have been worried about was my dignity.
Yeah, I feel bad for putting that out in the universe.
It's staggering how little I was harmed in the making of that video. I really wasn't hurt at all. I was obviously desperately humiliated. I don't even know what happened. I mean, how they've diagnosed that I turned my ankle in that news report when the lower half of my body was out of shot in the moment of impact, I don't know. But yeah, I was attempting to just sort of stand up in high heels and went very badly. If you'd said to me, David, Catherine, you know, could you ever imagine going viral? I'd have thought, well, probably not. But if I were to go viral, it might be for some profound things I'd said about feminism or women working in sport.
That's all to come.
Yeah. Yeah.
But first, we did this.
but first, falling over. If you'd asked my mum what might Catherine or Kathy, as she calls me, go viral for, she'd have said, yeah, falling over.
Who are your supporting actors in the video? who is Man with Coffee Cup?
Man with Coffee Cup is Tim, who is the floor manager in the studio. And I should say Tim has come under a bit of fire for not properly wearing his mask. And I should point out that Tim was standing at his workstation at the moment of impact, which is where the only place you're permitted to not wear your mask on site, and we were both at our workstations. Yes, he was there in a flash, and the only person that managed to suppress his laughter.
Yes,
but briefly, but until he knew I was okay, and then he let it all hang out. So thanks to Tim. Oh dear. I'm turning off my notifications
probably
overnight.
Wise.
Did you get one of those notifications from Twitter to say that you're getting a lot of notifications? Would you like us to help manage them? That happens sometimes.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
And what do they do to help manage them?
I don't know. I've never wanted help.
That notification, Matt, got lost within all the other notifications.
It seems slightly counterproductive, really.
I have not had that.
Hmm.
No.
Well,
no.
We're very proud.
I mean, what do you mean you're very proud?
All that engagement.
I feel like if you can't laugh at someone falling over, brackets, provided they don't get hurt, then what's the point in anything?
Yeah. Oh, no. I think it's brilliant.
When you've done a viral tweet, don't you need to plug something in the comments? That's what people do.
Oh,
plug their SoundCloud or their podcast, for example.
Is this my opportunity to get more free stuff?
This is when you should have said, oh, listen to the tennis podcast. I do this stuff all the time.
Okay. You could reply again and say, listen to the tale on the tennis podcast.
Yeah, listen to how I knock my teeth
out. Although I would understand if that would just be even more humiliating and you want to
I'm not going to do that. then it'll look staged.
That wouldn't be Catherine.
You know, this was Catherine.
Yes.
See?
I think people that have known me for any period of time will be aware that no one needs to stage me falling over. It's just a thing that happens.
We're definitely into double figures since I've known you. And I'm not even with you that often. We were concerned, I have to say, at the time. I'm the only one of the three of us
that doesn't have an influencer light, and it turns out that I'm the viral sensation.
You are. What can I say?
And being a viral sensation in 2020 it's in.
It just feels like it hasn't quite got the same appeal as it used to have, though. But anyway, you are one. So that's the end of it. I mean, last night alone, we had a moment where it was 2-3 in the morning, and I said, I always tweet, you know, the podcast coming, we've finished it, we've edited it, it's on its way, who's up for it? And then on this one, I just said, are you still up and where are you? And I didn't expect so many replies, and we got hundreds of people writing in to tell us where they were. And this was before Catherine did this. But we're talking about South Korea, New Mexico, St. John's in Newfoundland. Have I said that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah. Singapore, many parts of Australia, Tauranga in New Zealand, Manila in the Philippines, Brazil, Japan, Bolivia, Costa Rica, India, Seattle, where my Seahawks are from, Lima in Peru, Moscow, Buenos Aires, Lagos in Nigeria. Oh, all of those countries have got people listening to the tennis podcast, folks. And now you can probably double that because of Catherine.
You're welcome.
Amazing.
My humiliation is your gain.
Well, we think the world of you. You know we do. And we're just relieved you're all right. And you did give us a chuckle. Just a couple of final things. One, Alex Green has written in and said, thanks for the shout out last night. Sadly, I'm not Catherine's boss, but me. There are two Alex Greens, and the other one also backed us, by the way. Your boss did as well. So we've got two Alex Greens backing us. As always, a great podcast. Before COVID-19, I was planning to go to the semi-finals at the O2 this weekend, but sadly, not to be.
Hello, sorry to hear that. Other Alex Green. Everything I said about the name Alex Green still applies.
Still a favourite colour.
Yeah, favourite colour. All that. Great. Great name. I have a cousin called Alex. All of those things.
Yeah.
My granddad was called Alex.
All right. Excellent.
And yeah, he got me into whiskey, which I'm just about to take a sip of.
Brilliant.
So, all in all.
My sister owns a whiskey shop, so it all works. Anyway, and we would also like to say belatedly, 24 hours late, because I was supposed to do this yesterday and I clean forgot, to say happy birthday to Daryl, my old mate from university at Loughborough, who is somebody who gives me a hard time on a daily basis.
I was going to say, it's very generous of you, David, because he pretty much trolls you on our Instagram. I mean, it's amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's very gracious of you.
But he's got a magnificent cat called Gerald.
Yes, he does.
It was one of our mascots for Wimbledon.
Our Wimbledon mascot. Yeah. And the majestic Gerald.
And we don't celebrate anniversaries. We always celebrate the day after an anniversary anyway. Yeah, so in the finest tennis podcast tradition, we're wishing him a happy birthday plus one.
And I mean, just to clear it up, the reason I've agreed to it, Catherine, is because I finished one place ahead of him in the predictions. So
not in the quiz, though.
Yeah, but nobody remembers that, do they? Have we got any shout-outs, Matt?
Yes. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
For Douglas.
Douglas.
Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Douglas. Thanks very much for backing us.
I'm Douglas Hurd.
Yeah, political conservative of the 80s. It's not that one, I don't think.
It's been a long day.
We've got to stop analysing names. Oh dear. Who else we got, Matt?
We have Jay.
Hey, Jay, thanks very much for backing the tennis podcast in 2020.
One of my favourite letters in the first half of the alphabet.
Catherine, your glasses have steamed up with all the laughing.
Jay, there was Jay from Five when I was a kid. He was sort of handsome in a roguish, edgy way.
Hmm. Jay Rodriguez, who used to play for Albion. What can I say? Carry on, Matt.
And finally, we have David Lloyd.
What?
Which is a tennis name.
It is. Is it the tennis name? I wonder. Maybe not.
David Lloyd is David's Caroline Whittaker.
Yes, that's right. Yes. That's when I went on
the queue. David once got booked for something.
I was on the Victoria Derbyshire show.
David Lloyd.
Yeah, I was on the first of all. David, thank you ever so much for your backing.
Yes, thank you,
tennis
David.
Podcast in 2020.
Whichever David Lloyd you are.
Yeah, but yeah, I was booked for the Victoria Derbyshire show on BBC One. BBC One, proper telly, right? Network television. And in order to, because I didn't really know where, I didn't have anywhere I could go at Wimbledon, it was during Wimbledon, I didn't have anywhere I could go to record my bit of the chat. So I went into where they used to hold the Wimbledon queue earlier in the fortnight, and this was ahead of women's semi-finals day, I think. And so I'm in this deserted field, and I set up my briefcase and balance my phone on top of it to do my sort of video phone call into this live TV show on BBC One. And it worked. And up I popped. There's my face. And they caption it, David Lloyd, former Great Britain Davis Cup player. I'm thinking, now, does that mean they've just got the wrong bloke and they don't really want me? Or does it mean that they've got the right bloke, but they've just mistaken him for David Lloyd, Davis Cup player? So.
And you didn't ask?
Well, I mean, I didn't know it happened until I was off air. And then I'm getting loads of messages and laughing at me. So. Anyway, thank you, David, very much for your support.
Thank you, David. Great
Good
name.
Good luck with this edit, Matt.
I am done.
Only one more show to go tomorrow. Right, I think I better carry on here. Because I just want to say thank you to everybody who listens to the show. I mean, I hope you're enjoying it. But also, there's so many people that have sent us lovely messages over the last few weeks and months, and emails and Instagram messages and Twitter direct messages and all sorts of things. Just lovely messages, just really goodwill out there. And it really matters to us, you know, we really appreciate it. And I'm not saying this on the podcast to try to get loads more. It's not a question of that. It's just the decency out there, and it's really appreciated. So thank you so much for all your support, in what has been, you know, for everybody, a tough old year. And we've loved doing this, and we're going to do another one tomorrow. One more time for the ATP finals in 2020. So, Catherine, go and get a good night's sleep, And no more mishaps tomorrow. You know, it was very entertaining, but let's just call it the one. And Matt, thank you so much for your contributions. You're an absolute legend. And let's come back and do all this tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.